Hello, this is Joel and
Daniel
Young with For His Glory Ministry. We're teaching today on what did Jesus mean in that very famous part of the Bible in John chapter 8, verses 1 to 11, in the writing in the sand. Let's open our Bibles and read the text first together. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives, and early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people were coming to him, and he sat down and began to teach them. And the scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery, and having set her in the midst. And they said to him, Teacher, this woman has been caught in adultery in the very act. Now in the Torah, Moses commanded us to stone such women. What then do you say? And they were saying this, testing him, in order that they might have ground for accusing him. But Yeshua stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground. But when they persisted in asking him, he straightened up and said to them, He who is without sin among you, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. Let him be the first to throw a stone at her. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. But when they heard it, they began to go out one by one, beginning with the older ones, and he was left alone, and a woman, where she had been in the midst. And straightening up, Yeshua said to her, Woman, where are they? Did no one condemn you? And she said, No one, Lord. And Yeshua said, Neither do I condemn you. Go your way, even now, and sin no more. Yes, Danielle.
Tell us, Joel, what could possibly happen that they all left? They were all so adamant about stoning her.
Yes.
And all of a sudden they just leave? What happened?
Good question. We have a very strange, to the uninitiated ear, event occur here, and you're sensitive to that, thank God, in which we find that they're coming. They persisted in looking. They're looking for grounds to accuse Jesus, and they're going to stone her. They end up leaving. They have nothing to accuse him. She is forgiven by the Lord. And they drop their stones, everyone, beginning with the oldest down to the youngest. Now, there's a part that I became sensitive to by the Lord, the Holy Spirit, some years ago. It's verse 9. And look at it with me. And when they heard it. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Or even a few minutes if you need. What happened? The Lord was writing in the sand. And when they heard it, they heard something. And they began to go out one by one. Something they heard, something transpired during the event of what? When Jesus was?
Writing.
Where?
In the sand.
And they heard what?
He must have been speaking.
Okay, so there's two things we have to examine then. He said something and he did something, okay?
Right.
Now, a lot of people are standing exactly where those Pharisees were standing then. We may have some different clothes and maybe on a different parcel of land, but our hearts may be unfortunately set the same way. We see someone who has committed sin. We know it's wrong, but we can be wrong also in doing something for the wrong reasons. We can do right for the wrong reason and be very wrong. They were not looking to bring her to a place of healing, correct her by raising her up. There was an accusatory aspect here of the Lord himself they were seeking to do, number one. And number two, they were looking to bring her to a place of punishment. But interesting, there's a missing piece here. What was it?
Well, they caught her in the act of adultery.
Right.
Shouldn't they have caught someone else with her?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to do adultery by yourself.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's hopefully a point well understood. So, obviously, I have two questions. That is one question, that there were two.
Yes.
And only one was brought. So, justice was not being justly served, was it?
No.
Because somehow the man or the party, and the second party of the parties involved, was not present. He should have been. They both, according to the Torah, both must have been brought to justice. Number one. I have another question is, how on earth did these people get there in the first place to go find out what they were doing? I mean, what, did they go into the people's house? Were they staring in the window? I mean, what are you doing there in the first place? How on earth are you looking for? What's going on here? So there's a couple of questions we have to that note. But let's proceed. So we see they're looking to accuse Jesus. This is not looking for justice. This is not looking to do what is right. The motives are all wrong, and they're looking to test him and catch him and accuse him. Those are wrong motives. You can't do the right thing for the wrong reasons and be considered right, because the heart is not right. So when we look at other people and we accuse, we must first ask ourselves, am I seeking justice? Am I looking through this to bring that person to a place of healing? We should never call what's wrong right. That's equally wrong. But is the motive and the reason for what we do right or wrong? And we have to, each one of us, search our hearts and ask the Lord to reveal our heart to us in great depth so we can understand why we do what we do. Because people need to make decisions based on right-hearted actions. All right? The decisions must be born of the heart. So these people's decisions were not. And now we find that the Lord started writing in the sand. Now that sounds kind of odd to the uninitiated. We need information. That's been one that's puzzled even good commentators throughout the centuries, of trying to figure out what was he writing in the sand. Now, we should never, as believers, add, delete, or change the Bible, number one. Number two, there's an important biblical principle at stake here that we must be sensitive to. And the principle is, by the mouth of two or three witnesses, everything will be confirmed. Say confirmed.
Confirmed.
By how many?
Two or three witnesses.
Okay, now the witnesses can be people, and they can also be the text itself. So with this text, we should be able to find another witness to tell us that this is what it is and help bring out greater depth and understanding. Now, what we should do is look at this and look in the larger scope. John 8 is preceded and followed by certain texts, all right? We're looking at what else is going on here, when is this event occurring, and where. All right, let's get our questions on the board, our inductive questions, of which we'll ask and answer several, the five W's and the H. What are the W's? Who, what, when, where, when, why. It's fine. It's not an order. Just, you got the right questions, Danielle. And the H is the how. Perfect. So we asked the questions. When is this occurring? I look back before John 8, 1 to 11. Look at the end of John 7. If you start at 39 forward, you find that there's a theme. Actually, look at the whole chapter, and you find that this is the feast, all right? It is the last day of the feast, and it's the Feast of Booths, or Sukkot, the seventh of the feast mentioned in Leviticus 23. And it's the last day of the seventh feast. Hoshana Rabbah in Hebrew, all right? And this last day of the feast is critically important. Now, we did an in-depth teaching on tape on the holy days of Israel. We spent a whole weekend discussing the primary, the seven holidays mentioned in Leviticus 23, and also several others that are celebrated in Jewish teaching and tradition. Now, look to John 7 and the text, that's the text before, and also to John 8:12. You'll see two central themes. First, when is this going on? It's called the Feast of Tabernacles. That's also translated the Feast of Booths, B-O-O-T-H-S. In Hebrew, that's Sukkot, S-U-C-C-O-T, Sukkot. All right, the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, there's two central themes of that feast are water and light. Water and light. Now, if you just put in the middle of your paper John 8, 1 to 11, to the left you put John 7, to the right of that, John 8, 1 to 11, you put John 8, 12, because it's the next one after 8, 11, you'll find that John 7 talks about water. Jesus talks about out of your belly, really innermost being, shall flow rivers of living waters. And living water. And in John 8, 12, Jesus says, I'm the light of the world. Water and light. Water and light. Those are the two central themes acting like bookends to John 8, 1 to 11. So you got the picture?
Mm-hmm.
Water and light, all right? Those are two themes.
What do these two themes have to do with the woman and the stoning and writing in the sand?
Well, what that shows us, Danielle, is that we're dealing with a specific holiday, which is Sukkot, so we know when this is going on. We know what the themes are, and that's going to bring up another critical point, because what the rabbis did, thank you for that, what the rabbis have done is, of course, they've memorized the whole Bible. So like a concordance, you would instantly spring to mind all the verses dealing with water and all the verses dealing with light. So in looking at it, you would then say, let me look, And in your mind would come that kaleidoscope rushing of information of all those verses, and you would know what Yeshua is saying, all right? Yes.
Does that also tell you anything about where they are, where they're located?
Yes. Well, remember that the woman would have to be brought into typically the court of the women, so we know when, we know where, what's going on, and we need to know why, because these people dropped their stones when they heard something.
Right.
All right. So one text that bears very rich evidence for this is in John 17. I'll start at 12. Your key verse is 13. And I want everyone to be listening for water. Water. What are the two themes of this holiday? Water
and light.
Light. Exactly. And we're focusing first on
water.
And you would have memorized all the verses that in which water is found in the biblical text. And you know that it's related to one of the themes of this time, which is what? Sukkot, or the Feast of Tabernacles or Booths, right? And that Feast of Tabernacles is critical because now we begin to see what is happening within a particular setting. A glorious throne on high from the beginning is the place of our sanctuary. O Lord, the hope of Israel, all who forsake thee will be put to shame. Those who turn away will be written in the earth because they have forsaken the fountain of living water, even the Lord. This is in Jeremiah. It's a critical text for what we're studying here today, people. Jeremiah 17, verses 12 and 13. Jeremiah chapter 17. Verses 12 and 13. A glorious throne on high. Remember, you're listening for what? Water
and light.
And light. Here we're focusing on water. Okay? Good. And the theme of this, those are two themes for what holiday?
Sukkot,
which is the Feast of
Booths
or Tabernacles.
Right?
Good. And you want to study the feasts more, you look in the Bible, Leviticus 23. We did a whole tape series on that called The Holy Days of Israel. Now, a glorious throne on high from the beginning is the place of our sanctuary. O Lord, the hope of Israel. Now, let's bring out a quick point on that. The term hope in Hebrew comes from the same root word as the term, we have the term is mikvah, which is an immersion bath. Okay, say mikvah.
Mikvah.
Perfect. Mikvah is an immersion bath in which one would immerse themselves. We would use the term baptize. And an interesting point with that is when baptism was done, and there's a whole section in the oral law of the Jews called the Mishnah on mikvah, the immersion, and how much water, and a procedure, every step. Do you know you never immersed somebody else? You always immersed yourself. You baptized yourself. And one of the earliest frescoes, the wall paintings we have of Jesus and John the Baptist, which is better translated John the Immerser, was Jesus is in the water himself, and John the Immerser is standing at the shore. Very interesting. This would then mitigate against infant baptism, because obviously they can't baptize themselves. We're not saying that that is necessarily wrong. But it's not biblical, so you want to examine the reasons why we do those things, because you would have to immerse yourself. And in Acts, when we find that the immersion after Peter and his famous speech at Pentecost, which is another Jewish holiday, Shavuot, where all the people were baptized, all right, we find that people through history are wondering, were they sprinkled, were they dunked, what's going on? But it's starting in archaeological excavations, they found that there's a whole lattice work of immersion baths there, where you typically walk downstairs into a place and you would immerse yourself. And they've discovered, based on archaeological studies, that all 3,000 people that came to faith through the preaching of Peter by the grace of God, all 3,000 people could have been baptized within 15 minutes. The booths are all there. So that was already in place. And that was in the first century. All right? Now, look at that word again. We're still in Jeremiah 17, word verse 10. O Lord, the mikvah of Israel, you're the immersion bath. I baptize myself in you. Remember, the theme is water, and this has water. This is the immersion bath. I baptize. Are we not baptized into Christ? O Lord, the hope of Israel, all who forsake thee, all right, all who forsake thee will be put to shame. Those who turn away on earth will be written down. Also translates, those who turn away will be written in the earth. What was Jesus doing? He was
writing down their names.
Where?
In the earth.
Well, he was writing in the earth. He was writing in the earth. Those who turn away from thee will be written. The Lord is saying, you have turned away from me. Mm-hmm. Here he's proclaiming
who he is,
just by his very action, that he is the Lord, spoken about by the prophet Yirmiyahu Hanavi. Jeremiah, the prophet, Yirmiyahu Hanavi. He is the Lord. That's in capital letters in your Bibles. That is Yahweh himself, the God of the burning bush, the Lord God himself of creation. O Lord, the hope of Israel, all who forsake thee will be put to shame. Those who turn away will be written in the earth. Now, there's two places your name could be written. In heaven, in the book of life, the Lamb's book of life, or where?
In the earth.
In the earth, which are for those who have forsaken the Lord.
Yes.
So either you've accepted the Lord or you have forsaken
the Lord.
Good, rejected. That's an act of willful choice, because people, we all face in one direction. If we turn our back to the Lord, we're turning our face to serve someone else. So you always have your face towards someone and your back towards someone else. In spiritual terms, this is directly applicable. So understand that. Here the people are, and they're around, and they're accusing for the wrong reasons. Jesus is writing, and Danielle, you bring out an interesting point. Raise that question, because I just saw you just making that motion there. What were you doing with your finger there?
He wrote with his finger. Yeah. Everything that Jesus does is very important, whether he turns or whatever he does. If he uses his finger, that's
it's significant, isn't
we
it?
We should know about, yes.
Right, because he's God, and everything God does is godly.
Godly, yeah.
So in John 8, good discernment. John 8, verse 6, but Jesus, Yeshua, stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground. So a good student is going to study the finger of God. And one of the first places you find that is in the book of Exodus with the plagues. And you find that Pharaoh's magicians and sorcerers, when they saw the finger of God in one of the plagues, they said, this is the finger of God. We could do nothing. They heard of no more, because they recognized that is the work of God himself. Here's Jesus writing with his finger, and John is very careful to record for us, not just that he is writing, but Hebrew brings out such the depth and breadth of it all, that you look and it says, now Yeshua stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground. That's telling you God is writing in the ground. And what is he writing? Of course, either the name was written in heaven,
Lamb's Book of Life,
or on the earth. So in one action, they're getting that whole kaleidoscope of information. This is the Feast of Sukkot, or Tabernacles. It's the last day, which is kind of like in our baseball, the ninth inning, and it's a full count. So what happens at that point, it's considered in Jewish teaching, which we go in great depth on that tape series, The Holy Days of Israel, is considered where there's no more chance. The gates of heaven have been already closed, and it's a full count, and this is it. It's the last day, last chance for anything to go for salvation here. So the Lord is writing their names in the earth. Jeremiah, with all the other verses, come to mind about what are the two themes of Sukkot, water and light.
Mm-hmm.
So here it says, all who forsake thee will be put to shame. Those who turn away will be written in the earth, which is what Jesus is doing with his finger, the finger of God, that even the non-believers saw earlier when we talked with Moses in Exodus. Why? Because they have forsaken the fountain of living water, even the Lord. Now, the fountain is where, of course, it's a source point. They have forsaken, now Jesus is showing them, they have forsaken the fountain of living waters, even the Lord. That's they've forsaken the Lord, who is the source. The Lord is the fountain of living waters. So in verse 9, which the Lord made me aware of, I became sensitive to the Lord, and this 8:9, John, where it says, and when they heard it, so what do you think they must have been hearing, Danielle?
Maybe their names being called out as he's writing it.
He's writing their names in the earth. He may well be speaking their names and possibly what they have done.
Mm-hmm.
They know exactly what he's doing. He's saying, I'm the Lord. I'm the fountain of living waters. I have said that you have forsaken me. And in your action, you have done wrong. You have forsaken me. You stand wrong. They are coming to the Lord thinking they have twisted the plot. They're trying to accuse the Lord, and they find out that they themselves are the ones who are guilty. They themselves are the ones. So people, when you come to God for the right reasons. When you look at other people, don't point a finger, point a hand. No, extend your hand, reach for the people, embrace the people. Jesus showed us the way. He didn't say she didn't sin. He said, go sin no more. He didn't excuse her from the sin. He bears that sin. He tells her, you sin, now stop doing it. Your accusers are not here. I'm the only one who really can accuse
Praise
you.
God.
I choose not to accuse you. And now I direct you, do not sin anymore. You've been given grace, unmerited favor. So people, do just what Jesus did. And sometimes in areas where we're very strong, we are not so gracious with other people's hurts and needs and weaknesses. However, sometimes in areas where we're weak, we want other people to be very merciful and gracious to us. So go do likewise. Help people achieve, help believe, lift them up. Don't throw any stones at people, because that stone you could drop and land on your own foot. So be careful. Don't come with stones. Come with hands and hearts that help people, lift them up. And please do tell them, go sin no more. Now, people, recognize that your actions will determine where your name is written. How we live, what we say, what we do. Are we walking around with a bunch of stones in our pocket? Those stones are going to get kind of heavy and slow you down. You're not going to get where you have to go. Stop stoning people. Stop hurting people. Stop accusing people. What we do is going to affect our eternity. Where is your name written? Where is your heart? What are you doing? What are we doing to each other? What we do will determine where our name is written. Now, God has a plan for us, is for us to be with Him. Yet He's created us in His image and given us free will and choice as conscious, sentient, rational beings. Choose God. Choose life. Choose good, so your names could be written in the book of life and live. Don't forsake the Lord and His ways, else your name will be written in the earth, and people, one day the earth will be no more. Please be careful. by your words you'll stand, or by your words you'll fall. It is critical we make right decisions every day, because all things are open and laid bare before the eyes of Him with whom we have to do. God has not mocked people. Whatever we sow, we're going to reap. So please be careful. God bless and keep you, and thank you.